WTLC AM Indianapolis.
Indy's choice for inspiration and praise.
AM 1310, The Light.
You're listening to Afternoons with Amos. I am Maggie Lewis, City County Council President, sitting in the big seat for Amos Brown. We are having a conversation about the crime in our city and how do we address that. I know that my colleagues wanted to respond to the last caller, then also to finish the conversation about the homestead credit. Councilor Feaster.
Yes, thank you very much. I wanted to address, first of all, the COPS grant that was brought up a little while ago, about 5 or 10 minutes ago, and just kind of reiterate for the public's education that the COPS grant is a temporary thing, usually 3 years in length. So if we hire a police officer, we don't want to stop paying them at the end of 3 years. And
Correct.
Need to find some kind of a sustainable funding stream that will be able to pay them over the life of their careers. And kind of keep in mind, the chess pieces on the board keep changing because insurance goes up and, you know, retirement goes up and all of those other costs. So we need to find a sustainable stream. Now, having said that, I'd like to address the schools issue. It is my understanding that Dr. Farabee is supporting what the mayor is proposing in terms of the homestead credit elimination and the public safety tax, because that impacts the schools. And we have someone here that's going to address the education. But I do know from my personal perspective that my school superintendent, Dr. Butts, is in favor of what's being done. Even though there's going to be a small impact to the schools, I think I have some figures here that I might be able to give you a specific figure.
Okay.
But he is in favor of what the mayor is proposing because it addresses the educational piece.
We'll come back to the education component in a second. But on the COPS grant, you're right. It is somewhat of a temporary solution. However, we have 3 years to come up with that funding. And I think our city, our folks in administration, they are smart folks. They get paid the big dollars. And I think after 3 years, they can figure out how to find $1 million to continue to fund public safety. Councilor Barth.
In addition, last year during the budget process, President Lewis and I were the negotiators for the council, and we were able to find enough money in the budget to actually hire 80 new police officers. And so if we would have pursued the COPS grant and gotten that money to allow us to hire new officers, I feel confident we could have found the money to continue. And let's be real specific, just in the last 48 hours, we've discovered that the mayor was able to find $12 million to put on contracts for the Justice Center. So he found $12 million for the Justice Center. Why can't we find money for police? This is really, when it comes to the budget of the city, it's really about nothing more than priorities. So when it comes to priorities, to me, a number one priority is making sure that our city is safe, and that equals police.
Right, and so it does come down to priorities. And before we go over to flip the conversation to education, We have to figure out how do we find, and Councilor Feaster, I do agree with you, we have to figure out how to find ongoing funding. And I think that is the debate. And so I look forward to that conversation after the mayor introduces the budget on August the 18th. We have a caller on line four, and I know that he is eager to speak about crime. He has been fighting crime for quite some time. Mr. Hogsett, welcome.
Well, I'm glad to be with you, Madam President, and the Vice President in this in very important and timely discussion.
Thank you for being here. So we're discussing the crime plan. How do we address crime in our community? You know, my colleagues, Republican and Democrats on the council, agree that we need additional officers, but we understand that that's not the only solution to this crime issue that we're facing. Can you weigh in on that?
Well, Madam President, I haven't heard the previous guests you've had. I understand our public safety director has been on the show, and representatives of FOP. At least their past public statements I am in agreement with, whether it's Troy Riggs, the chief of police, Rick Height, whether it's the FOP, whether it's you and the vice president, your leadership on the council, we're all in agreement. We have to put more officers on our streets. I'm sure it's been said a dozen times already on the program today. As a former federal prosecutor, I also know that there is no way we are going to arrest and prosecute and incarcerate our way out of this, this violent crime epidemic that unfortunately has gripped our city. We have to do more to bring the community together, to bring families together, and to create a sense that this is our city, that this is that this is our home, and that we all collectively have a responsibility in protecting that. My greatest concern is the need for very proactive, very visionary, very energetic, very, dare I say, inspirational leadership that I think unfortunately has been lacking in the last several years. I think over the last 10 years, while the city has experienced growth, I too often believe that there are certain communities and neighborhoods within our city that have been overlooked and neglected, and as a result, there's a sense of the city growing apart and not together. And so I respect the two terms that our mayor has given the city, but it comes down to what I call first things. Do you feel safe? Is your neighborhood and your community a safe place for your kids to play, and to grow, for you to live and to work? Ultimately, is this a good place to raise your kids? Can they be educated well? Can you provide your family with, a quality, meaningful job opportunity? And I think on all of those points, the city has serious challenges. And on all of those points, they have implications as to whether our people, be they young or old, make the kinds of decisions that stay away from crime and criminal related activity, and make the good decisions to that will in the long run better our city in very meaningful ways.
Thank you. So since you called in, and I'm going to be really quick with my question, and hopefully you can be somewhat quick on your response because I don't want my Republican colleagues to break out in hives. But since I have you on the line, why are you considering running for mayor?
Well, I think there is just, as I said, a lot of systemic concerns that I have heard just in the last 2 weeks. I've been moving around the community listening to people express. You know, we have a lot to be proud of in this mm-hmm. city, and I give credit where credit is due. There are many things that the current administration and, frankly, administrations before this one have done that have made our city a unique and wonderful place to be. But too often, recently, while parts of our city have sparkling cultural trails, other parts of our city have gone decades without sidewalks. Where parts of our city attract wealthy commuters, other parts have middle-class families struggling to find jobs. Parts of our city benefit from the best schools that they have to offer, while other parts of our city, unfortunately, it's easier for a young person to get their hands on a gun than it is for them to get a high school diploma. These are fundamentally mm-hmm. systemic challenges that face our city today, and I look forward to being part of that conversation.
Thank you. And I know you have a very busy schedule, so I appreciate you taking time to call in and be a part of this conversation. And I do thank you for your leadership in our community.
Now, I want to thank you and the Vice President for the leadership you provide our council. And thanks for participating in this conversation. It is very timely for our city and one that obviously doesn't lend itself to easy, quick solutions, mm-hmm. but with dedicated visionary leadership, I think Indianapolis is capable of doing anything it sets out to do.
Thank you so much. Take care.
All right, Madam President.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
So we are going to turn the conversation to education, and we now have another guest in the studio, someone that I truly respect, and I really believe that he is an expert and a leader in the field of education, and we do have our Deputy Mayor of Education here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Don't be scared. Oops. So part of the mayor's plan, and we discussed, the first part was on public safety. The second portion of the plan does address education. And I wanted to give you the opportunity, Mr. Deputy Mayor, to weigh in and share what does the plan say specifically, but then also, you know, what is it that we need to know about the plan?
Sure. So I'm really excited to be here. Thank you for having me. The focus of the plan really is around how do we provide preschool and provide high-quality preschool, making it more affordable and more accessible for more families across the city of Indianapolis. So research suggests that, you know, if you're born into a low-income family, you'll face both academic achievement gaps and social opportunity gaps over the course of your lifetime. And sadly, an increasing number of children in our city over the past two decades are growing up in poverty. Today, about 32% of children live in poverty. And so we know that that has a huge impact on each of those persons over the course of their life. You know, we are 48th out of 50 cities in the country in terms of upward social mobility. So if you're born in poverty today, you're likely to live in poverty throughout the course of your life. And that's true of urban areas across the country. But it also has a huge impact on our city, our state, and society as a whole. In 2007, a study showed that childhood poverty equated to $502 billion in terms of negative impact for the country, which was 4% of GDP. So we feel we have an obligation to address that. And preschool is one of the most research-based, proven approaches to addressing the impacts of childhood poverty. In terms of academics, children come to school ready to learn. They're less likely to need special education services, which is better for the school districts. Behaviorally, they're less likely to end up having issues in elementary school. They're less likely to be incarcerated. They're less likely to be part of the criminal justice system. And then economic benefits. They're more likely to own a home, to pay taxes, to have a meaningful career. So the plan really is focused on how do we make that affordable and accessible for more families.
And so with the mayor's plan, we are, the plan suggests that we eliminate the homestead credit to pay for pre-K, correct?
That's correct. So 5 million of the homestead tax credit would go to really two specific types of grants. First, to make preschool more affordable for more families. So the Department of Health defines preschool as, or preschool being affordable as 10% of a family's income. So if you earn $40,000 a year, affordable preschool should cost you $4,000. But today, the average cost is closer to $8,000. So we would essentially provide a supplemental scholarship program for about 1,300 children to be able to access high-quality preschool across the city using the state's accountability system, or what's called Pass to Quality. The other types of grant would be around making high quality more accessible for families. So let's say that a school district or a day nursery center wanted to replicate its work or wanted to move up on Pass to Quality. We would provide grants directly to those providers so that they could improve, and then they'd be eligible for more state and federal funds.
So how do you go about selecting who will get those scholarships?
Sure. So basically, there's a number of criteria. We looked at the city-based plans in Seattle, Denver, New York City, and across the country that Democratic mayors have championed. And then we, you know,
say that again. just kidding.
Let's talk about those visionary leaders.
Sorry, Mr. Mayor.
That being said, so essentially that we looked at those plans, and then we worked alongside some of the best thinkers in our state on this particular issue and came up with some guiding sense of principles. So one, we want to make sure that grants go to areas that are highly impacted by crime. We want to make sure that children qualify for free or reduced lunch before they're going to receive a scholarship. And so, you know, we basically created that list of principles, and then the United Way will create a selection committee that will make those decisions.
So it sounds like we are up for another break. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Hello, this is Maggie Lewis, president of the City County Council. And when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
And we're back. You're listening to Afternoons with Amos. Mr. Deputy Mayor of Education, you were in the middle of a comment when we went to break.
Sure. Well, as I was saying, the grants are really focused around two key issues, mm-hmm. affordability for families, so scholarships that enable children from low-income backgrounds to be able to access high-quality mm-hmm. preschool. And the other issue is around accessibility, which would be direct grants to providers so that they could move up on the state's rating system mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and be eligible for more federal and state mm-hmm. funds. But the United Way will make the grants based on some guiding principles from what we've learned both from experts in our state, but also from cities around the country mm-hmm. that are doing similar programs. So I won't list off all of the guiding principles here, but the focus is on moving providers up on the path to quality rating system, serving children from low-income backgrounds who qualify for free or reduced lunch, mm-hmm. Serving children in neighborhoods that have high crime, children that have additional at-risk factors, so children like foster children, mm-hmm. Prioritizing immunization and other sorts of public mm-hmm. health-related issues. So there's a number of factors that we're going to take into consideration as we make these decisions, and we want to make sure that those are fair and consistent. Mm-hmm.
And so our friends at United Way are going to somewhat take lead of those scholarships. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So the United Way would essentially create a selection committee. Mm-hmm. I think the exact composition of that's to be determined, but it would be inclusive of the United Way. And, you know, I'm sure we're certainly open to feedback on what that would ultimately mm-hmm. look like.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Hampton, I'm going to bring you back into the conversation. I know education is an area that you often speak on and have a passion about. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, for me, education is really the key to overcoming poverty and crime. And it's really a matter of priority, and I think Councilor Bart really said it right. It's about how we prioritize as a city and even as a state that boasts a $2 billion surplus should mm-hmm. be able to find money mm-hmm. for education, mm-hmm. And particularly early childhood education. Mm-hmm. If we can find $12 million for the Justice Center, which is a good thing, we should be able to find money for education. Mm-hmm. And particularly for me, it's disturbing that Indiana is a state that has a compulsory age for kindergarten at 7. Our children should be going to school mandatorily earlier than 7. It places us behind, places the starting blocks really behind the starting mm-hmm. line. And it also really says that we would rather finance failure than success. And mm-hmm. what I mean by that specifically is, okay, we're going to pay on the back end mm-hmm. to build more prisons, or we're mm-hmm. going to pay to deal with crime after the fact. Right. Let's do some preventive measures by educating our children and helping them to start on a successful, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. a footing. Mm-hmm. But we don't do that.
Right.
Yeah, and I just want to echo Reverend Hampton. I mean, I think from my perspective, this is an issue where the state should be funding this. The mayor has said publicly, it's embarrassing mm-hmm. that Indiana is one of, up until now, 10 states that provides no funding for preschool. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think the city, though, is uniquely positioned at this moment in time to serve as a bridge from where we are mm-hmm. to where we hope to be as we all collectively advocate mm-hmm. for more state funding for preschool. And if we can, in the next 5 years, really increase the supply of high-quality providers through this grant process, when state resources do start to flow into the system, there'll be a lot more high-quality providers, mm-hmm. which means we won't be waiting decades to build the system mm-hmm. that our children deserve. Mm-hmm. We'll do it now in partnership.
Mm-hmm. And I believe I heard our Chief of Staff, Ryan Vaughn, the administration Chief of Staff, Ryan Vaughn, say that part of this plan is to lobby our state legislators for additional funding for this. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
That's correct. In a meeting the other day, he told me that the intent is to do three things with the General Assembly. One is to ask for the current pilot projects mm-hmm. to be expanded. Two, mm-hmm. to ask for more money from the state. And then three, to look at expanding the current pilot mm-hmm. project mm-hmm. statewide. So I'd just add that I totally agree with Dr. Hampton. He's spot on. Education is really key to the future. And conceptually, I think this program is really great, modeled on some really good models from around the country. I think really what we need to do now is really just figure out the math. It's a math mm-hmm. problem more than mm-hmm. anything. Listen carefully to the people in the city if right. they agree with eliminating the homestead tax credit. Do we find the money through budget savings or another way?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Councilor Feaster, you was going to say something.
Hey, I absolutely do want to say something. I heartily endorse this concept. Mm-hmm. I could not be more behind the concept of mm-hmm. early education than I am. Mm-hmm. One of the statistics that I heard a long time ago was that when when governments are planning for jails and jail mm-hmm. beds, they go to second grade and see how many children failed second grade. That is a frightening mm-hmm. statistic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a mentor at one of the Wayne Township schools, and I see little second graders coming in mm-hmm. that cannot read. They cannot read, and it is really, really sad. I was blessed with a grandmother who was a teacher, taught me to read at the age of four. And when I see 7 and 8 year olds mm-hmm. coming in and mm-hmm. they can't read, it's really, really sad. So we have to do something mm-hmm. about this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not only going to take the money, it's going to take the will of the mm-hmm. parents and the families in the community that will get the children to whatever educational institution mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. it is mm-hmm. that's created. So we need to come together as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Finding the money is only one part of it. Getting the cooperation of the public at large is going to be mm-hmm. the biggest
it's going to be key.
Factor.
Right. So we have a couple of callers on the line, and one's been waiting for quite some time. Reverend Ajabu.
Hey, man. I'm glad I'm patient.
I'm glad you're patient, too, but you do have Reverend in front of your name.
I don't know how it is being quiet, but we'll go with that. We'll go with that.
Yes, sir. Sorry to keep you waiting.
Especially with my pastor in the room now.
You got to be on your P's and Q's on the job.
And I thank you for this opportunity. And listening to the conversation, is very pertinent and, mm-hmm. and important. And I've heard the word used, priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the priority of preserving the American dream. And in preserving the American dream, the foundation is a person's home. And now we've got it set up. And it's interesting that the mayor who ran on eliminating property taxes would now take the position to raise people's property taxes to finance education, early childhood education, and somewhat public safety. I'm all for using early childhood education as a preventer of crime, as crime prevention. However, I don't like using taxes on my home
mm-hmm.
as a way to finance it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would suggest that if you want to finance it, go to the state mm-hmm. and talk to them about that money that they're getting from the lottery, which was education was one of the justifications used to get people to support gambling in Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I say that we need to revisit that. And again, I am all for funding early childhood education, but not with my home.
But not with your homestead credit.
Certainly, yes. And this, again, and I've heard you say that we're not going to arrest our way or imprison our way out of this crime surge that we're finding. I agree 101%. And Pastor knows that it says very clearly, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to change behavior, you got to change a person's thinking. And to that degree, I would like to extend an invitation to everyone in the studio and that's listening to a march that is called Silence the Violence. And we're going to do that August the 23rd at 12 noon. We have the police chief, Pastor Hampton, has said that he's in support of that. We would like everybody to come and help us to march silently
mm-hmm.
in light of saying that, look, we want to silence the violence, and sometimes silence speaks louder than words. That's going to be August the 23rd.
August the 23rd.
August 23rd at 12 noon.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to gather at 34th and 4th Manor. And we're going to walk that neighborhood. And we're going to ask our Father, which art in heaven, help us to silence this violence. Hopefully, all of you will be there.
All right. Thank you, Reverend. Have a good day. The next caller is on the line, Pastor Thornton.
President Lewis, how you doing? And Dr. Hampton and all your guests. Here's some things that I'd like to comment on, and I've tried to put it out there, is that there needs to be an education of young people as it relates to, if you ever stop by police officers, the do's and don'ts of what you do and what you don't do. I don't think officers are very apt to inform people, and then they want to incarcerate you when you fail to respond in the way in which they should. I think there ought to be, you know, that do's and don'ts. Then I think there needs to be a more positive relationship between the community and the police department. People in the community needs to buy into whatever it is that the chief and all of them want to see happen. No one knows more about what's going on in that community than the people who live in it.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be more of a positive relationship forged between the officer in the community and those who are in higher up position. I have suggested to them, adopt a cop.
Mm-hmm.
No one want to pick up on that because it seemed to seem as if people want to be militaristic from the police perspective and have all of these armored equipment and treat the citizenry as if they are criminals and they have not even done anything.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be a more positive relationship at at the grassroots level in terms of to do what they're talking about doing, because crime, as you know, is big money.
Mm-hmm.
And here's another thing that there needs to also be funding of programs in the summer for young people, and somebody needs to get at the forefront of that. If you got all these athletic programs and all of these different things coming, there should be some revenues coming from that where monies are available to create some summer employment and even longer extended employment for young people.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I don't think any greater individuals that can really bring some resolve to this issue than your community leaders. And I'm talking about your pastors who can come together and give some input as to how to turn the tide of what's going on with this whole crime. They're not bringing these leaders to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they bring these leaders to the table and they converse about this issue, I think you'll have some major resolve. So with that being said, I want to thank you so very much for allowing me to share this. But once again, adopt a cop.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the enemy to the police department. Or police officers need to realize that. We understand your families and all of that. However, these people in your communities are family-oriented people, too. And they need respect. And there needs to be a relationship where we can have together. And let's turn this situation around. Thank you, President Lewis, and I pray that you have a blessed day.
Thank you. God bless you, Pastor. It is time once again for a break. You're listening to Afternoons with Amos.
Hello, my name is Jessica Key, staff writer with the Indianapolis Recorder newspaper and Indiana Minority Business Magazine. And when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
And we are back. We have a caller on the line. Lou?
Yes. How are you doing, Ms. President Maggie Lewis and your former guest with you?
Good afternoon.
I did have a question. Mm-hmm. My first question to you is, this is concerning the police situation, the need of 500 additional officers. My first question to you is, what is the percentage of sheriffs do we currently have in the city of Indianapolis?
The percentage? I'm not sure if we have that number. Do you have that number, Vice President Barth or Bart? I'm not sure exactly what the number is, the staffing number is, but I can find that information out to you if you leave your number off air.
Okay. Well, in addition to that, because the reason why I wanted to know is before the merger, they utilized the presence of the sheriff and the IPD at the former time to try to cover the city in regards to coverage of law enforcement in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that now the sheriff's powers have been sort of reduced. Maybe I'm wrong. If I am, please correct me in that matter. Because I'm looking at it. If you utilize the sheriffs again, you know, that can cover a portion of the 500 that's needed, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's a little bit more money that's saved. What's your taking on that? And if that is so, does not the mayor have power to give the sheriff back the power that they once had before? And I'll take your question off the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you for your question, Vice President Barth.
That's a good and valid point. Post-merger, however, the sheriff stopped doing traditional law enforcement as far as patrolling in certain parts of the county. And but during the IMPD Staffing Study Commission, there's a lot of discussion as to how the sheriff's department could partner with IMPD. And my understanding from the sheriff himself is that there's a strong desire to do more partnerships with IMPD and the city. In particular, there's a lot of opportunities that the IMPD Staffing Study Commission discussed. For example, could the sheriff be involved in patrolling the Monon or patrolling mm-hmm. other parts of the parks? And the sheriff's deputies are already out doing good work in the community, issuing warrants and so on. So they have a strong presence in the community, and there's opportunities to do more with greater cooperation. And that was, in fact, one of the recommendations of the IMPD Staffing Commission, including not only just that idea with the sheriff's department, but also clearer and better definition for what other police departments in Indianapolis can do. For example, where I live, right near Butler University, the who I see patrolling my street a couple times a day is the Butler University Police Department. So it would be great to see a much more formal agreement between the IMPD and BUPD as to what exactly each entity is supposed to be doing. Then there's real clarity about how the IMPD can stand back a little bit, why BU stands forward, patrolling some parts of the neighborhood. There's lots of opportunities to do there, so you bring up a good point.
Thank you. It sounds like someone is doing some construction work on the on the building during this show. And I want to take another caller, but it looks like we've lost our backup. So, Deputy Mayor, I know that you wanted to speak about the funding for additional slots for pre-K.
Yeah, so I just wanted to piggyback off something that Reverend Ajabu had to say. Yeah, I very much agree with his assessment that this is an issue where state funding should be moving to mm-hmm. make preschool affordable and accessible for more families. However, if you look at the legislative cycle that we're in, you know, this could very well be 3 to 5 years before we see significant resources mm-hmm. Being allocated for this purpose. And so, acknowledging that, we have this opportunity to bridge mm-hmm. with city resources. So I think, you know, our rationale is very clear, and we can't emphasize enough mm-hmm. the role that the state should play. Mm-hmm. I also want to emphasize the return on investment that we're going to see as a result of this effort. And studies show anywhere from $1.80 to $17 return on investment for every dollar spent on preschool.
Mm-hmm.
But the best studies show between $4 and $9. So we can, you know, expect a significant return on every dollar that we put in, mm-hmm. not to mention the private funds that we would hope to raise.
Mm-hmm. So what are the odds of us really being able to get some support from the state, from the governor's office, from our state legislators? You have more friends over there than I do. And so what are the odds of us really getting the support that we need?
So I am optimistic that over time this issue will continue to build support, particularly if cities and corporations are mm-hmm. stepping up and saying, this is something that we need to do and that we want from our legislature.
Mm-hmm.
I can also say that under Governor Pence's leadership, we have the pilot program.
Mm-hmm.
Marion County is one of five counties that was selected. We would anticipate up to $3 million coming here mm-hmm. to Marion County. And Councillor Barth, alongside Councillor Miller, co-sponsored an ordinance to mm-hmm. provide the match for just that purpose. So I feel like this is an issue that's getting continued momentum locally mm-hmm. and statewide.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really worth talking a little bit more about the pilot that the deputy mayor just mentioned. This is an important proposal that was passed at a committee about 2 weeks ago, and that will be heard in the full council on the 18th. It hasn't gotten as much attention among all this other discussion, but we are on the verge of passing a pilot project for pre-K already.
Mm-hmm.
And if that passes on the 18th, we'll have 700 kids. We'll have actually 770, I believe, will have access to pre-K starting in the fall of 2015. So the groundwork is already being laid by the council with mm-hmm. the proposal that's pending at this very moment. So I think we need to be very cautious and smart about how we spend our money, and having this pilot teed up is a really neat opportunity to mm-hmm. go ahead and test this out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have another caller. Tim, you're on the line.
Yes. First of all, if they cut back let the police start riding together and then take them cars and sell them. That would help them out. Also, what they need to do is get the tax money from the lottery, cigarettes, and people drinking. That would help it. Mm-hmm. Also, if they do a crime prevention concert and bring some celebrities here to concerts, and people will come out to their concert, that would help with the schooling and putting more police officers on the street. That's what they should do. But they need to tax the lottery, drinking, and smoking. But if you take back that tax credit, a lot of houses are going to go in foreclosure. You're going to be right back in the same situation we was a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And us investors are going to be buying them property.
Mm-hmm.
So do not do that, because people cannot even afford to pay their taxes now.
Mm-hmm.
So you definitely don't want to do that, Mayor. And if you listen to this conversation, you definitely want to take notes on this and quit taxing the people to death. Tax cigarettes, lottery, and gambling, and smoking. Tax debt.
Mm-hmm.
That's my comment for today.
Thank you so much for calling in, counselors. And so he raised a valid point. As I've been out in the community and attending town hall meetings, people are saying that these are two taxes, and they truly cannot afford it. They understand the concept that we need additional officers. They understand the need for quality seats as far as education and pre-K. However, they feel like it is too much of a burden to ask them to bear two tax increases. Have you been hearing that same thing, or your constituents saying it's okay to do the two taxes?
I'm hearing a little bit of both. My constituents say that the tax is worth it because they know what they're paying for.
Mm-hmm.
They know what they expect to get for that money.
Mm-hmm.
I hear about the tax burden.
Mm-hmm.
I have part of Hawville.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very familiar with folks that are struggling to pay grocery bills,
let alone
tax bills.
Right, right.
But I think, too, an educational process would be helpful in this whole scenario because people just see it as a tax. They don't really know how much it is.
To interrupt you, but does it matter? It's still a tax. It's an increase.
Well, actually, the homestead credit elimination is just eliminating a subsidy. I know it means they're paying more, but it's
not really a tax. Okay.
So it's semantics.
We'll have that debate on the floor.
Semantics.
Yes, yes, ma'am.
But again, I think if people understood clearly how much it would be and what it's going to benefit them for that payment, I think that would be helpful in their decision making. I'm not here to make the decision. I'm here to listen to what my constituents want me to do.
Absolutely. But you both have a vote, though, that's going to be very important. And so when we go and cast that vote on the budget or on the proposal that's coming before the council, folks are going to feel that they're going to have to pay. If we support the proposal to increase the public safety tax and eliminate the homestead credit, our constituents, Republicans, Democrats, and Libertarians, are going to feel it, right? And so we're going to listen, but we still have to cast a vote. And if we vote in favor of it, they will be paying more.
And that is true.
Right?
But again, I would like to get the educational piece out there,
get
the information
most
out there, because people can't make a decision until they understand
the
full impact.
We agree. We agree. Vice President Barth?
And what I hear consistently is three things. Number one, the public saw what you and I were able to do during the budget process last year, President Lewis, and that's that without a tax increase, you and I were able to find the money and negotiate in the budget 80 new officers, and they'd like us to start there. Can you find a way to find new officers within the current budget, number one? Number two, they support the idea of a tax increase if it is explicit and specifically for one thing and they understand what it's going for, and that's where the public safety tax comes in. They are supportive of that idea if they are sure it's going to go to new officers and not be diverted to something else. And when it comes to the homestead tax credit, they have concern for the very reason that some of the callers have brought forward, regardless of the semantics around it, it equals a tax increase on their homes. And people are concerned about that. I've gotten one email after another on that one. So that's how it's breaking down for me as far as the feedback I'm getting. So I'm going to, as I say, I'm going to continue to go out in communities, visit neighborhood associations like I always do, present the plans and hear what folks have to say, because it's really, at the end of the day, it's up to the residents to let us know what they want.
Mr. Mayor, or Deputy Mayor.
So, one, I just completely appreciate this conversation and Councillor Feaster and Councillor Barth sharing their views. I must say it's a little bit ironic to be having a Republican supporting funding for preschool and Democrats not sure where they stand on that issue.
I would disagree with you.
Yeah.
I would disagree with you because I think it's clear that President Lewis and I have been consistently supportive of education. And
absolutely.
In particular, as you may recall from 2 weeks ago today, out of my committee, I passed a proposal to fund pre-K in Indianapolis. So to say that, to make the statement you just made is completely inaccurate. In fact, I think we're very supportive of pre-K. It's a math problem. How do you find the right way to pay for it? We've been presented with one option that may not be the best option.
And I am incredibly grateful for your support. You have been incredibly supportive. I don't want to send the wrong message here. But what I do think is, you know, it is a question of prioritization. And if there is an alternate perspective on how we can provide funding and mm-hmm. support for such an important thing for our children and for our city's future, then, you know, I'm certainly open to hearing what those mm-hmm. ideas
mm-hmm.
are.
Mm-hmm. We have time for one more caller. Anonymous.
Yes. Here's my question. I want to say this. I am 100% in support of finding funds for our police officers mm-hmm. as well as our young people.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is that we're looking at one segment of the population, and that's homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
For the police officers. That concerns me. I think that the problem in the city is community-wide, whether you live in a home or you live in an apartment. Everyone should be carrying that burden, not just the homeowners. My other concern with the homeowners is since 2008, I think everyone will agree that there tends to be more renters in Indianapolis than homeowners. How long is that trend is going to last? So eventually, taking the money from the homeowners is going to dwindle too. That only makes sense to me. I think it's only fair that something is figured out some kind of way that everybody shares this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even want to call it a burden. We should want to do this. We should want to live in a safe city. In order to live in a safe city, we need to pay a few more dollars to make that happen. But everyone needs to do that. It's called fair equity. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilor Feaster, you was going to respond to that.
Yes, I would like to. And I know she brings up some very valid points, and it goes back to what I just said about educating what the issues are. The homestead credit elimination would be on properties, on homeowners, but the public safety tax is an income tax. So that does spread the pain, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
That does spread the number of people that would be contributing to those sources of income.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, go ahead.
And just one final fact. I think when you're thinking about this, as we all keep saying, it's really just a matter of priorities, and we need to look at this in a holistic manner.
Mm-hmm.
The favorite topic I've talked a lot recently is a deal the mayor made for a recycling proposal here in Indiana. And the fact is he, without council approval, gave away 70% tax abatement to a company. That's $56 million over the course of this contract. If we hadn't given that away, we would have $56 million we could direct towards police or to pre-K or whatever it may be. So we really need to do a good job mm-hmm. of thinking hard about what we're doing from a global budgeting process.
Mm-hmm. So Bart, I want to bring you back in the conversation just really quickly. As the council CFO, who is going to pay the majority or who has the burden of funding or supporting or paying for the homestead elimination credit, if that makes sense?
It does, and we have a report that was provided by the Office of Finance and Management about the breakdown of those homes that would be most impacted by the homestead credit. Now, homestead credit is actually based upon, of course, the not only your after your tax deduction from the state, but then the actual amount or the value of the home. And as we've been debating, is it a regressive tax? It is in a way, but then again, it also depends on what taxing district you are. But the majority of the homes that are going to be impacted, and when I say majority, I mean the biggest amount of homes that will be impacted are those under 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And if you bump that up to those under 150,000, about 75% of the homestead deduction will be felt by those 75% of those 150,000 or less.
So those individuals who owns a home and their home cost is 150,000.
Assessed 150,000 or less.
Thank you. That was the word I was looking for. $150,000 or less. And so middle-class folks are the ones that are going to be paying for this. Is that?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say those of the, you know, what we considered a middle-income family are probably going to feel the impact most.
Okay. Deputy Mayor, you look like you want to say something.
No, I just wanted to speak to the homestead tax credit versus the homestead deduction.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten some concerns from constituents who've reached out and asked about the elimination of the homestead deduction, which would have a significant impact.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important that we be clear that we're talking about the homestead tax credit, which uses income taxes to pay down property taxes, not the deduction, which would have a much greater financial effect.
Mm-hmm. Councilor Feaster, were you about to say something as well?
Oh, and I was going to echo pretty much what Deputy Mayor Clove was talking about, but also wanted to add, in that $150,000 and under category, that would be only the folks that haven't reached the 1% cap.
Yeah, there are a lot of folks at the 1% that this won't affect. So again, it depends on what area of town you live in.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have some that have low taxes and they'll be felt more. Those with higher taxes probably won't feel any impact at all.
Okay.
And that was why I wanted to put that link back up that people could go to online, and it's no longer available. But it averages about $22 a year.
Okay.
And
for
that's
the,
just
for
an
the
average.
Elimination.
For the homestead credit elimination.
Right. And not, that doesn't include, the $22 does not include the increase of the public safety tax if
that
we
is
opt
correct.
To do that. Right?
That
right.
is correct.
Okay, so I know we're running out of time. So the next steps, if you will, on August the 18th at 7 p.m., the mayor will introduce his budget, his 2015 budget. Some counselors have already introduced a proposal to eliminate the homestead credit and increase the public safety tax. We'll start that debate on August the 18th. I encourage everyone listening to reach out to your member of the City County Council and let them know what your position is on those two issues and if you support this plan as presented. But then also, I think it's important that you reach out to the administration as well, because at the end of the day, regardless of what the council decides to do, the mayor is the person that has to sign these proposal into law. And so those are the next steps, if you will. Councilor Bark, do you have any last minute comments that you want to share regarding the crime plan?
No, the one thing I will say is that the IMPD Staffing Study Commission spent 4 months very carefully and thoughtfully reviewing the situation that we have in crime in Indianapolis and making very serious and thoughtful recommendations how we can make changes and get more police on the streets. All that information is available. If you just go to Google and put IMPD Staffing Study Commission, you'll find it. All that information we looked at is available to click online and every meeting you can watch. So you're interested in this topic and how we make decisions on the council. This information is available for you to review.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And thank you for being here. Councilor Feaster.
First of all, let me say thanks to everyone that's been here today. It's been a very robust and enlightening and challenging in some respects conversation, but that is what we as a community need to do going forward.
Absolutely.
Because we have problems to solve, and I don't think 29 members plus, you know, whoever's on the 25th floor are going to do that by themselves.
I
we
agree.
Need everybody's input.
I agree.
So having said that, I do have an off-topic announcement that I would like to make. This is a small business summit that Representative Carly Macer and I are putting on together on September the 9th. And this is for small business owners to help them solve the issues that they address as a small business and help them to thrive. So September the 9th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Ben Davis University, and that address is 1155 South High School Road. Small business owners are encouraged to come. There's an emphasis on the west side, but everybody's welcome.
Thank you. And thank you, Councilor Feaster, for being here. Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you so much for having me. This is exactly the kind of discussion that we as a city should be having. I also want to let folks know they can find the preschool plan at oei.indy.gov and read more about what we're proposing there.
Mm-hmm. And thank you, Mr. Mayor, for being here. And Dr. Hampton, you'll have the last word.
And thanks for having me on. And again, just want to echo that it's going to really take the efforts of the entire community, police, parents, pastors, politicians, everyone. It's not one, it's all of us.
All righty. Thank you. And you were listening to Afternoons with Amos. God bless.